following commentary does not necessarily reflect the views of the staff and management of WBCA or the Boston Neighborhood Network. If you would like to express another opinion, you can address your comments to Boston Neighborhood Network, 3025 Washington Street, Boston, Massachusetts, 02119. To arrange a time for your own commentary, you can call WBCA at 617-708-3215 or email radio@bnnmedia.org.
Welcome to Life Matters. I'm your host, Brendan O'Connell. Well, we have a very special guest today who's come all the way from South Boston to our studios here in Roxbury. And we're going to talk today about what are the psychological and emotional aspects of a young man, a teenager, or maybe someone in their 20s or even early 30s, when their partner has an abortion, and how does it affect them, and is there a way to get over the bad feelings that do occur in abortion. So we have with us today Laura Zanol, and she was born and raised in Rhode Island, is currently living in Southie, attained a bachelor's degree of arts in psychology and a master's of social work degree at Rhode Island College. She holds additional certification in advanced nutrition and integrative medicine for mental health in practice as a Catholic social worker, for over 20 years providing therapy rooted in faith. She spent 19 years counseling support to teenage and young adult males, expertise in the area of general counseling, especially in the area of men's mental health. Well, welcome, Laura Zanol.
Thank you.
Laura, how do we, what did you see as the issue and the problems and in our culture today as when it comes to men or teenagers that have a partner that's had an abortion, particularly because after donating the sperm, we'll call it donating, they have no legal rights.
Right.
So that's going to put adverse pressure on them.
One of many factors, yes. And I think, you know, in general, men seek mental health at a rate less than women statistically. That gap is narrowing, thankfully. I think with some of the stigma around men receiving mental health support decreasing, but there's still a gap there. So in general, men are more likely to try to problem solve on their own, to internalize, to, you know, really not talk to anybody about what they're feeling and just sort of push through, right? Man up, as we say. And I think, you know, when it comes to having a partner who has had an abortion, even more so, there's such a message out there that, you know, men really don't have a say in abortion and therefore shouldn't have any feelings. It wasn't their body, it wasn't their choice. And I think with that factor as well, just really compounds the complicated grief that comes along with being a man who has experienced an abortion. Oh. Yeah, so.
Well, now, I've read sociological studies, David Reardon, for instance, and he says that between 64 and 68% of all abortions, the woman feels pressured. Is it the man pressuring him? Does he feel guilt afterwards that he pressured the woman into having an abortion?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's one factor for some men is, you know, especially as they get older, maybe they do enter into a relationship where they have a child. And I think sometimes they don't even realize how much they had suppressed that guilt, shame, grief. One of many factors, yes, being that maybe they were encouraging or pushing their partner, the girl, to have an abortion. So I think that's one of the factors that can come along with the grief that men find themselves in, sometimes years later.
And now you had mentioned here something called disenfranchised grief.
Right.
What is that?
So disenfranchised grief is something that I had heard about many years ago, and it's really I think something that to me applies directly to the idea of a man who has been in a relationship with someone who's had an abortion. So disenfranchised grief is grief that is not openly acknowledged or socially accepted or publicly mourned, right? There's some types of grief that I think are pretty universal, right? You have a loss, you experience the loss of a family member, somebody you love. I think that's pretty common, right? And the advice of friends and family would be, oh my gosh, what can I do? How can I help? I'm here if you need anything. Mm-hmm. But disenfranchised grief is not that socially accepted, right? So I think if a man is experiencing grief after an abortion, especially if maybe he encouraged the abortion, mm-hmm. He may feel he doesn't have a right to grieve. And I think that even more causes the internalization of those feelings, which is going to potentially come out in ways like depression, anxiety, anger. And, you know, disenfranchised grief I find to be very complicated because you're often alone in that process of mm-hmm. grieving, where in more socially accepted grief, you will have more support.
Right. That's very interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, I read a little bit about the support after abortion. Now, I had not heard of this outfit. Mm-hmm. And when I went to their website and looked, I didn't see any names. Mm-hmm. But can you tell us about that? Because the people that get counseling, that decide to go get counseling, and it's mostly women, mm-hmm. The men, they're not necessarily seeking it, or, right. or they're just. Mm-hmm. What can we do to, or how do you deal with the people that? Mm-hmm. I guess how do you deal with the people that have this anger and shame, and how what's a process that you would help them to get through this whole thing, and
yeah.
hopefully feel better about themselves, and mm-hmm. you know they obviously need to seek some forgiveness.
Right.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And I think just doing what we're doing today, which is opening up the conversation to say it is absolutely understandable and normal to have grief as a man, mm-hmm. even though it did not happen to your body. It is absolutely understandable to have grief around that. But I think even before that, and when I had read along the way, many intake packets at a therapist's office for both men and women do not include the question about abortion. We include questions about trauma, family history, myself included. I've never had that on my intake process. Mm-hmm. And I think in conversations, realizing that, you know, unless somebody is ready to talk about that, I may be sitting across from someone who has experienced an abortion and might not ever say it. Mm-hmm. Or may not even identify that the abortion that they had at 17 or the abortion that their girlfriend had when they were 18 might be at the foundation of why they're coming in to see me 10 years later for anxiety or depression, right? So I think it's opening up the conversation to help men realize that this may be a correlation between how they're feeling and, you know, even if it was decades later. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the men in that study, the support after abortion study, you know, one that stuck with me in particular, and I just found heartbreaking, a gentleman said, for 40 years, it always remains in my mind as I see babies enter our family. I wanted the child, my partner opposed. 40 years yeah. of grief. And just now that this study had happened, finally was talking about it.
Right. Mm. Oh, my goodness. Do you have some success stories? How would a success story unfold after they've done some counseling with you?
Right. Well, I think we talk a lot about, you know, self-forgiveness, but, you know, I think that's something that, you know, can be a real gray area. So forgiveness, you know, hopefully through confession, through the sacrament of reconciliation, but I think also to be able to just sometimes say these things out loud. Really, you know, for things that you've kept in your heart and in your mind for years, to say them out loud to another person and to not be judged and to be supported. I think the success story comes from being able to resolve the grief. Mm-hmm. You know?
And a lot of times couples that have an abortion, they end up breaking up. Mm-hmm. For instance, if a man years later feels guilt about it. Do you recommend that he go back and speak with the woman that he, who had had the abortion of his child?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that.
Is that helpful or not?
You know, oftentimes, because you certainly, you want to respect somebody's boundaries and, you know, depending on if the woman would be open to that. But I may suggest, and a lot of times with grief and loss, what I'll suggest is writing that person a letter. And even if maybe you're never going to send it, even if it's, you know, you're going to throw it away or you know, bury it, whatever might happen. But, you know, I think with grief, being able to sit down and write a letter to that woman might be something I would suggest in therapy, to say, you know, through the lens of however old that man might be at that time, you know, what would you like to say now that you didn't or couldn't say when you were 18, you know?
Now, there's Project Rachel and Rachel's Vineyard, and I know someone who tries to get women to come to sessions where they can, and it's hard. It's hard to get the people to come.
Yes.
And men, I think it's more difficult. Yes. Because men, I guess, read here, 82% didn't know where to go for help.
Right. Yeah, I think that speaks volumes. So, you know, I think being able to open up the conversation and share these resources, because there are places to go. Rachel's Vineyard does offer sessions for men and couples as well, though it is difficult, to get people in person when there's so much shame buried there, right? So I think the other option is Support After Abortion has lots of resources geared specifically for men, self-guided resources that they can do anonymously in the privacy of their own home. They also have journals and things that men can follow, as well as more public support, so groups and
resources. When you say journals, do you mean books or do you mean writing a personal journal?
Both, right. They have both pamphlets that men can read through to normalize and see maybe a list of this common symptoms that are associated with grief and loss. And also, yes, self-guided journaling to help them try to process some of that grief and loss, anxiety, depression, whatever they may be experiencing.
Now, I read a pamphlet recently that talked about 10 myths of abortion. And do you know what some of those myths are?
I mean, there's many, but I think, you know, specific for men, I think it goes to that you may have felt relief at that time, right? You may have felt some relief, but that doesn't mean you can't also feel grief. Both can be true, especially post-abortive, right? So I think, you know, the complicated emotional experience of abortion, I think there's just so many myths with that. But I think for men in particular, I think that's the most dangerous one, that they shouldn't, if they were, especially if they were pro-choice, right, that they maybe don't have a right to have grief after or regret or any of those things. And I think that, I don't know which myths maybe specifically you've read, but I think for men that was one that stood out to me, that in a lot of these studies, the pro-choice men were the ones that felt the most grief.
Right. Well, one of them is, don't worry about it, you'll get over it. You know, that's one of the one thing I've seen a lot of. And then, do you do counseling with men and women at the same time? Is that
I don't specifically do couples counseling. I think that's something that requires a different type of training. I'm specifically primarily in the practice of working with individuals. But there certainly is opportunities, especially through Rachel's Vineyard and experiences like that, where if men and women wanted to go together, or even in the situation of maybe you're happily married, starting to family plan, and you may have that conversation that your spouse had experienced an abortion prior to your marriage. And there might be a grief process there that needs to happen. You know, again, so sometimes there's so much shame built in that, that, you know, you hear about couples that hold that in for decades, right? So I think it's sometimes too being able to have that support together to understand where the other person's coming from. You know, if you're a wife and you find out that your husband had a girlfriend who had an abortion before you were married, there's some feelings that are going to happen there, right?
Yeah,
so
right.
being able to process that through support, and he may have never received support around that. So I think in some of the research too, what I've seen is men realize after the birth of their first child that they have grief.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some regret and guilt there.
That could be years later then.
Years later, right.
The networks that are set up, I mean, the number of women and men, that particularly men, they don't seek counseling like women do, but still the amount of women seeking counseling to the total amount of abortions each year, which is around 1 million people a year in this country right now, maybe more with chemical abortions occurring, which is another psychologically very difficult on the women. And I don't know what the resolution is not to have an abortion. Now, as far as you've been involved in Catholic counseling, how does Catholic counseling enter into your counseling of teenage boys or young men?
Well, I think having worked in a Catholic school, the therapy that I was always participating in was consistent with Catholic social teachings, right? And that was something that was important to me, and especially for the families that are sending their children to Catholic schools. I think they want to know that if someone's giving their child advice, that it's going to be consistent with the advice that they're giving and how they're raising their children at home. So that was a natural progression for me when I went into private practice. I spoke with Monsignor at the Diocese of Providence, Rhode Island, to sort of go through the process of, you know, what do I need to do to advertise as being a Catholic therapist? Because I can't be a social worker without saying I'm a Catholic social worker, because it's just who I am. And so we had conversations, and, you know, it's really just that I'm an active Catholic. I go to Mass. I participate in the sacraments, that I'm, you know, actively engaging, you know, in my faith. And that's what allowed me to be able to fairly advertise as a Catholic therapist, but mostly I think being consistent with Catholic social teachings.
And what about contraceptives? You know, contraceptives are, the Catholic Church says no to contraceptives. And what do you tell people that come in and that you counsel? What do you, what kinds of things? First of all, they probably haven't even broached the idea in their own mind.
But what
do you tell them then?
Well, I think natural family planning has come such a long way with technology, right? So I think we're able to now get thermometers with double digits and use apps, and there's, you know, there's just, technology has really made it much easier. So educating on natural family planning, encouraging them to also speak to their priest and get more information on that. But I think, I think with the invention of apps and things that can make it, you know, really just a part of your everyday life, it's just so much easier.
Right. I've had done shows on NAPRO technology, if you've ever heard of that, and also other people. I can't think of their names right now. But there's actually several different natural family planning methods that are out there. But I found doing this show that about a year into the show, I said when contraception, which really came in big time in the mid-60s, I think, 1960s, that really changed everything on how men and women relate to each other.
It did, and
it wasn't good, from what I could tell. You know, what I've seen through the years. Men weren't respecting women, and women were like, "Gosh, this guy's terrible," that kind of thing.
And to, you know, to what you mentioned earlier with 1 million abortions, you know, statistically worldwide, maybe more, from what I've read, about 600,000 men accompany women to those appointments.
Wow.
You know, so, and, you know, I've read something like 95% of them said it was the most stressful and one of the worst days of their life. And you know, 5 to 10, you know, we don't know the percentage because many don't come forward, but really have severe mental health repercussions from that. You know, 600,000 men accompanying women to appointments.
Out of about 1 million, roughly, a year.
Right.
Which is, and nowadays there are far fewer saves, what they call saves. In other words, a woman is walking in and with her boyfriend or husband, and nowadays they have what like the Planned Parenthoods have what they call death squads. They come and get the woman when she comes out of the car and you know, bring them into the building without the pro-life person. So the amount of saves amongst pro-life sidewalk counselors has gone way down, which is a shame.
How
do folks get in touch with you if they want to, you know, if they need counseling or want counseling? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have in-person appointments in South Boston and Rhode Island, as well as virtual appointments available. My email is Catholic Social Work, all one word, CatholicSocialWork@outlook.com.
I see. Yeah. And does the, was there Bishop Tobin down in Providence?
He was until recently. Yeah.
Until recently? Yeah. And he was very much pro-life.
Right.
Did you have dealings with him at all as far as...
He was very active in always attending at least a few masses per year at the high school that I worked at in Rhode Island, and always had, I think, a visible presence and support for our Catholic schools and the Catholic young men at the school I worked at. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And did you work there as the social worker?
I did.
And how many people would come and visit you, may I ask, during the course of the year?
Yeah, I would say, you know, typically around 100 or 120 was about how many young men I met per year. And many of those young men
Out of a population of how many?
It ranged from 700 to 1,000, give or take, depending on enrollment.
Oh, wow.
And many of those young men stay in touch over the years as they go to college. And, still will keep in touch and have virtual appointments or check in, which is great.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm. What do you find the most gratifying thing about your job?
All of it.
All of it?
I do. I can't imagine ever doing anything else. You know, God made me a person with plenty of flaws, but I don't judge. I just genuinely love people, and I really very much appreciate when somebody has the vulnerability to come forward and talk about some of the most difficult experiences of their life. It's truly humbling. You know, there's some heartbreaking things you hear, but there's just also such joy and success. And to see somebody recover from whatever they may be experiencing is just, it's a blessing every day.
Wow, that's really something.
Yeah.
That's something that if you're looking for a job and a resume, you wouldn't necessarily think about that. And what is your solution to stopping all this? You know, basically abortion, which is the murdering of innocent young, innocent children in the womb. What do you think we need to do, basically, in this country?
Pray and leave room for God. I think there's it's so countercultural now, right? But I think families need to have these difficult discussions in the presence of their, you know, teenage and young adult children, and be comfortable discussing and be comfortable praying together and pray together for each other as a family. I think just the answer to this is prayer.
Well, anyway, well, I really appreciate your coming on today looking at the emotional and psychological aspects of relationships involved around the abortion issue, where young men, teenage men boys don't really know where to turn, so they can turn to you.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much for the work that you're doing. It's
Thank
an important
you.
Vocation.
Thank you.
And folks, we hope you found today's show to be unique, informative, content-rich, truthful, and thought-provoking. Thanks for watching. I'm Brendan O'Connell, your friend for life.
The preceding commentary does not necessarily reflect the views of the staff and management of WBCA or the Boston Neighborhood Network. If you would like to express another opinion, you can address your comments to Boston Neighborhood Network, 3025 Washington Street, Boston, Massachusetts, 02119. To arrange a time for your own commentary, you can call WBCA at 617-708-3215. or email radio@bnnmedia.org.